Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Not Quite Hollywood podcast. This is John.
I'm Jamie.
And I'm August.
And in this podcast, we talk about everything movies, and we're going to just jump right into our movie picks for the week.
I guess I'll go first. I saw a movie called La Ein. I probably said that wrong.
La Haine.
La Haine. La Haine.
La Haine.
It's a French film, and I do not know the French language at all. It's spelled L-A-H-A-I-N-E, if you ever want to look it up. 1995, black and white, which was, gave it like a different feel. Like, even like begins with documentary footage of like riots and stuff like that. And it was in black and white. So to jump from that into the movie, which is, you know, fictional, it kind of had that weird flow to it. The director is Mathieu Kassovitz. He hasn't really done anything really notable. Not really notable for, I guess, the American audience. Like, he hasn't topped it. The film, it follows three immigrant friends in the housing projects in a suburb of Paris. And one of their friends, Abdel, was brutally attacked by police and sent to a coma. And after that, it breaks out into a riot within this suburb. And the movie takes place the next day. So it's like you don't see the great, you know, chaos of the riot unless it's like the documentary footage or the real life footage. But you still, like, you can feel that lingering pressure from the previous night. And Vince, played by Vincent Cassel, he is just phenomenal.
He's great. Everything I've seen him in, he's great.
Yeah, even like Ocean's 11 and, or no, 12 and 13. Like, he had a very small bit, but he did really well in those movies.
Black Swan.
Oh, yeah.
Trance.
I haven't seen Trance.
He's one of the best parts of the movie.
I wanted to see that.
It's good. I mean, it's pretty good. It's definitely not Danny Boyle's best, but...
Well, yeah, this is train spotting.
You know what I loved him in? Was Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Oh, yeah, he was in that.
When he was the mauled-up guy who acted like he didn't have an arm for a while, and then at the end he pulls it out, and it's all... I don't know if you've seen it, but
it's really good.
It's a really good film.
Speaking of French movies.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a French
film. Oh, yeah, it's a French film, yeah.
That's interesting. Well, he plays, like... Just, I think we could say it's like your average amped up ghetto-ish person. Like, it takes place in the French ghetto.
Okay, and this came out in 95?
Yeah.
Was this in any way have to do with, linked anyway to like an interpretation or a response to like the Rodney King riots that happened in like 91, 92?
I'm not quite sure. Nothing popped up of him saying that this was... There actually was like quite a few people making comparisons between this and Do the Right Thing.
Okay, yes.
By Spike Lee.
Which I love Do the Right Thing. Mm-hmm. I don't like much since, but
yeah.
Do the Right Thing I thought was great.
Except for Inside Man. Inside Man's great. Well, if you like that movie, you'll love this one.
Cool.
He's got his two friends, Hubert and Saeed. Like Vince, he's a Jewish immigrant. Hubert is an African immigrant, and Saeed is an Arabic immigrant within this. And so it kind of deals with, like, the racism that's prevalent in France at the time. And, I don't know, Vince is, you know, more like the hot-headed. Hubert is just wanting to separate himself from this violence, and Saeed is kind of in between the two and mediates them.
Yeah.
So... Really, there isn't much to the movie. Like, there isn't, like, a plot that's just, like, right there in front of your face. It's more like just watching these three people live out their lives and kind of, like, react to this moment. I mean, that's what the main thing about the movie is, being reactionary. There is this really amazing shot that signifies their transition from Paris, or from the suburb to Paris. Like, in all the scenes within the suburb, it's like very like close-up shots. Like, their faces just fill the frame or whatever. There isn't like maybe some location shots, but they're like mostly just focusing on the characters on top of like a roof at a hangout.
But is that the idea, though, to put more emphasis on their interconnectivity rather than where they are? Like, it's set up that way. Like, they're immigrants of Paris, but...
Yeah.
Or France, but then they have... It's about their different conflict and different viewpoints.
Well, then, yeah, I mean, actually, they all kind of feel the same because they're all immigrants. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like you have this huge community. Like, there's not a lot of white people around within this suburb. Except for the police, mostly. Like, they'll come in and... there's like plainclothes cops, which is something that I couldn't imagine being pulled off now. Just like cops in plain clothes going around and inflicting justice on everyone.
Just instigating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, you like really, you get this like sense of community. Like, there's scenes in which, you know, you go on top of that rooftop and they're just all hanging out together, having like one guy's cooking hot dogs and he's making people, you know, pay for hot dogs. There's one moment that's really cool where they just watch some break dancers
in 1995.
In 1995, and they're pretty damn good break dancers. I was actually very enthralled. I'm like, this is really cool. This is like the entertainment and dispersed throughout this, like, man, this place fucking sucks. But anyways, they go from there to Paris. And the shot, when they arrive, they're just like on this balcony. And it's kind of shot as it was while they were in the suburb. Like, it's just kind of flat. There isn't a lot of deep focus or anything like that. They're as tall as the buildings. But then all of a sudden they do the Zolli,
mm-hmm.
where they, what, Dolly...
They pan in or push in and then they zoom out.
Yeah. What he said. They do that. And all of a sudden you get that, like, really, is it deep focus or whatever, where everything just becomes mm-hmm. blurry behind them. And all of a sudden then you just, like, watch them shrink in front of these, like, this background of all these tall buildings and stuff like that. And it's just kind of like, whoa, this is, you know... You get the idea right there in that shot. Like, you know all that you need to know, like, from what the first half of the movie is to where, like, where they're going in the second half. And it's amazing film. It doesn't last too long. And I was, like, worried that, you know, by saying that it's a listless film, that it can kind of get, you know, like, boring, be like, oh, well, I don't see, you know, where this is going, so I really don't give a shit. But just seeing all these characters interact and just seeing, like, the places that they go and, like, the different characters that they meet, it just really pushes the film along and things just get wilder and wilder. And what's really interesting is just how relevant it is today with racism and violence.
I was gonna ask that. How does it hold up now, seeing it now, when all that shit's going on still? It feels current, doesn't it?
Because Oh, yes. Extremely current. And I mean, it kind of gives like a little bit more of like an understanding of all riots that are, you know, centered around race, racial relations between police and the people in which they are to serve and protect. And I kind of gained a little bit more of an understanding of the inner city people, the people who live in the projects, like where they're kind of coming from. I don't want to spoil too much, but there you find out that, you know, the plainclothes police that are around enforcing the suburb, they kind of have some dealings going on within Paris. Yeah, the relevancy is just crazy.
That's funny, because for like the last 10, 15 years, we've kind of like forgot about racism.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't really like on the surface.
It wasn't in the limelight, yeah.
And with the clearly politically what's going on in our country nowadays, it's come back. I mean, it's not not even like hidden anymore. It's just out there.
Yeah.
Like racists are like proud to be racist now. You know what I mean? They're out like... So yeah, a movie like that. Definitely, like, Do the Right Thing, too, we mentioned earlier, is definitely would be very relevant now.
Mm-hmm.
Which I want to mention, you mentioned earlier, like, the idea of giving the characters in this little community, like, a sense of culture and a sense of community.
Sense of,
like, Do the Right Thing does that so well. Like, everyone in this little area knows each other. They don't know each other. They know each other by name. They know what their deals are. You know, their little hangout spots, mm-hmm. everything like that. And then when something happens, which actually deals with police brutality... and Do the Right Thing,
mm-hmm.
you see how that community reacts and whether they're going to pull together or separate from each other.
And I'd say like Do the Right Thing, that kind of focuses on wrecking the pizza shop or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
In this movie, it's like Vince's character, he wants to kill a cop.
Okay.
So it's like a little bit more intense than, you know, just like wrecking a pizza shop. Like he says, their friend Abel, who's in a coma, he's like, when he dies, I'm going out and I'm killing a cop. And Hubert's like, no, you know, that's violence. And I don't want to spoil the end, but it's kind of like occurring to me. Just, I would say the main message of this film is like, violence and hate creates more violence and hate. Like, it's, you know, or Ouroboros.
Well, yes, the violence begets violence begets violence.
Yes.
It just doesn't stop, you know. Even with, like, good intentions, when someone tries to use violence to solve a problem with good intentions, oftentimes it's...
Yeah.
It comes back on them.
Yep.
I was interested in seeing this because I had heard a few things about the movie, but... What got me to, like, sit down and be like, oh, I'm in for a ride, is it opens up with a little monologue about how a story of a man on top of a skyscraper, and he jumps off, and as he's passing these windows of the skyscraper, at every level, he says, so far, so good, so far, so good, so far, so good. And then it, you know, interjects with, you know, it's not about how you fall, but how you land.
Mm.
And so it's kind of like, starts it off and being like, there's going to be this society that is falling.
Yeah.
And it's just like, how is it going to land? And, well, it ends with you wondering, like, there are no answers or no questions that are answered. So yeah, definitely recommend it.
Cool. Sounds good.
The French, to me, have some of the best, like, independent international films.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, when you think of international, like, the French have been doing it for so long and such high quality. Like, there's some great Russian, German work.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, the French films I've always been a fan of. Like, it was kind of like lackadaisical in a sense, but it had some meaning behind it. Have you ever seen The Dreamers?
No.
No. A lot of French actors in it. I think it was shot. It was co-production in France, so... But I mean, there's other films like that, like Brotherhood of the Wolf is one of the best ones, and they have such a great hold on how to tell a story, and these characters, they're so memorable. And
oh yeah, I mean, honestly, I was quite surprised on the type of movie, just because like my previous interactions with French film was The 400 Blows mm-hmm. by. Was it Francis Truffaut?
Truffaut.
And Jean-Luc Godard. Like, I watched like two of his films. So they were as like a different era of French film. But those are the, you know, main names that you hear.
Like the City of Lost Children. That was French. Have you seen that with Ron Perlman?
No.
Surreal
no.
sci-fi.
Oh.
That sounds cool.
I just looked out to verify it was French. I was 99% sure it was. And it's really, really cool as far as imagery goes. If you like Brotherhood of the Wolf.
What year of release?
I think it was 95. Wait a minute.
I guess yeah. I remember another one. Holy yeah, Motors. Have you guys ever heard of Holy Motors?
Oh, I heard of it.
Weird. It's a weird movie. Like, experimental. That's all I can say. Experimental art house. That's some interesting ideas behind it. Poetic. But I didn't understand the poetry, so I was just like, I lost interest. I'd like to try it again.
It's a different language. How are you going to understand it?
Well, subtitles. Actually, there wasn't very much dialogue either.
Oh, cool.
Following a guy who does different roles in the city. I have no fucking idea what that movie is.
It's one thing I like about doing this podcast is... It's like now it's like, oh, Brotherhood and the Wolf, I gotta watch that again. City of Lost Children, I gotta watch that again. You know, which we can then bring back as more things to discuss.
Yep.
Holy Motors, I'll watch again and I'll come back and I'll tell you. Like, is it actually worth it? So, John, what movie did you watch?
I picked one of my favorite movies of all time. It was definitely my favorite movie in 2011.
Barney's Big Adventure.
Close.
Okay. I thought that was 1998.
That was like remake.
That was
like green dinosaur.
They had that stupid CGI Barney.
Yes,
I know. Not the one in the suit.
At least they did mocap.
Like mocap.
They reversed his colors.
They made him edgy. Okay, back to my movie. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, and August just made a grimace. And I've been listening to August since I've known him. Talk about movies he enjoys and movies he doesn't like. I need to know why you do not like Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. But before we get into that, the director is Thomas Alfredson, known for Let the Right One In.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
The cast, Mark Strong, John Hurt. I'm just going to get the list. Gary Oldman, who plays the lead, George Smiley, Toby Jones, Colin Firth, Benedict Cumberbatch, Tom Hardy. The list goes on and on. And I don't understand where you find flaws in this movie. Because I think it's one of the most perfectly shot movies I've ever seen. It's paced perfectly. It's written perfectly. Dialogue. Everything. It's a beautiful movie.
All right. I'll tell you one aspect of it.
All right.
It's sexist. Because that's only male actors. No, I'm kidding.
I thought you were serious. I was saying it's based on the 60s.
No, it's not sexist. Did you read the book before seeing
it? I haven't read the book. I have to admit that. And I tried to watch the miniseries they did back in, like, I think the 70s, 80s with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, Alec Guinness.
Alec Guinness. It was George Smiley.
Oh.
I found it was just too dry. Is it Ewan
McGregor?
They're
Obi-Wan. Yeah, funny.
The real Obi-Wan.
When he was like 2 years old.
Yeah. It's George Smiley.
No, this is what gets me about this film. Like, I like a good mystery and a good thriller.
Hmm.
And this movie, there's not a wasted scene in this movie. Every single scene bridges something else. Everything that looks like it's a wasted scene or it's just, like when he's just swimming in the water, he's just staring at a wall. Or something is all metaphoric, all means something, and all pieces together by the end of the film. I think every performance was done amazingly. I didn't see one performance that looked off or didn't look right or was cast wrong.
No, not at all.
Gary Oldman's George Smiley, it's like, I don't know why, every time he's on the screen, I'm just like fascinated. And half the time he doesn't move.
No.
And when he does move, it's like they captured perfectly George Smiley's. He will not do anything or not say anything unless it's important, unless it means something. Him just turning his head to look at someone based on dialogue is important.
Yeah.
Because in his head, it's like he's not as mouthy as Sherlock Holmes, but in his head, this is all getting unraveled and figured out, and you don't even really notice it. It's just through his subtle actions.
Yeah. Hmm.
In one scene... It's one of my favorite scenes, and people would usually watch it and say, I don't understand what the scene is. It's George Smiley and the two other characters are in a car. And it's a shot from the back of the window. And there's a bee in the car. And this bee's flying around, and the other two characters in the front are talking, and they're just trying to swat this bee away. And they're just pushing it out of the way, and they can't, you know, they don't know what to do with it. Smiley just turns, rolls the window down a little bit, bee gets sucked out the window and just rolls his window back up. Now, most people would say, what was the point of that scene? Whole point of that scene is pointing out George doesn't stop thinking. George yeah. Smiley knows, and he knows how to solve problems. He knows how to figure it out, and the easiest, quickest, most efficient way to do it. And that was just roll the window down, B gets sucked out. But it's total metaphor for how he is as a detective spy, you know, character.
Yeah.
So again, you know, I want to bounce off of you a bit.
He doesn't use violence.
He rarely does. And when he perfect, because there's a scene at the end where he takes out his gun and it's actually like in a Ziploc bag. You know, and he pulls it out of another bag. Mm-hmm. And that just shows you, like, he would never, unless it's an absolute last resort and he thinks there's no, you know, curb in a confrontation.
Yeah.
He will take out his gun. But and that's
it's not like a quick draw.
Yeah, he's not a quick draw. He's not running around kicking down doors and pointing his gun at people, you know.
But that's all I know, John.
All I know. So I could see how people would find it boring. Because if you're not paying attention to every little word and not paying attention to the mannerisms of all the characters and not keeping, like, you know, keeping it all fresh in your head too, because towards the end you'd be like, oh, that's why, like, he said this to that person or what that meant. Like, there's various scenes where there's, like, flashbacks to, I don't know, are they MI6 or something? They're like they're like an MI6 kind of group. And, like, John Hurt's character is called Control. He's the leader.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, he kind of gets pushed out of the group. Takes George with him, forces George Smiley to retire. But it doesn't stop John Hurt's character because he still suspects there's, like, a mole in the group. So he kind of gets Smiley to investigate independently against the group. But there's all these flashbacks throughout the movie of a Christmas party. When they're all having fun, they're all partying, and you get to see all the interactions of these characters, how they would interact in a normal social scene. And it just, it cements how they all feel about each other when they're actually trying to work together. Because, like, for example, to, like, John Hurt's character, Control, was really hard on Toby Jones's character, Percy. Like,
yeah,
there's one scene where he's, like, trying to the punch and it's not strong enough, and he's like, Percy! He's like, did you make this punch? And Percy's kind of like proud. He's like, yeah, I made it. And he's like, follow the recipe. You know, it'll take us 5 hours to get drunk on this. And he's pouring alcohol. And you see Percy, just the look on his face, just like, he's like, I did follow the recipe. So you can see Percy feels undermined by him. So that goes back to when they're actually trying to do their spy work. Has that resentment against him. Which is why he would try to, like, overachieve and not, you know, go through, dot all the I's, cross all the T's. To try to, you know, get a big score to try to impress Control. And there's so many scenes like that. I don't want to spoil anything because there's one big one that happens that kind of reveals something.
Okay.
Thank you.
See?
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, no, Jamie hasn't seen it yet. But to me, that's like, because I'm a fan of, like, really well-written, like, literature, this felt like it was really well-written, really well put together, nothing wasted. And I enjoy it. I don't care. People could say it's boring, you know, or dry or dull, but when I watch this movie, I'm hooked right to that screen the whole time.
You actually kind of make me want to watch it again. I'm not gonna lie. I am one of those people that I watched it and I found it boring. And this is gonna be weird.
Well, no, because I want to hear it. Because I want to hear why people find it boring.
I want you to say it.
Would you say it? The punch sound effect.
Yeah.
This is gonna be weird saying this, but even though I found it boring, I wish it would have been longer.
Because, I can see your point.
My interaction with Tinker Tailor Spy was...
Fuck that soldier.
The first trailer, you guys remember it?
Yeah.
And it has, like, those violins where it's like...
That's what hooked me on the...
Exactly. I heard that and I was like, I want to see this movie. Yeah. And then I found out it was a book before that. And I was like, well, you know, leading up to the release of the movie... I'm going to read the book. Love the book. But I was just, like, disappointed in the movie because the book, it's a slow burner.
Yeah.
And, like, it goes in a lot more of all these different characters.
Okay.
Of, like, with Percy and who actually ends up being with the spy. So when I was watching the movie, it just kind of, like, popped out of nowhere because you don't see a lot with that guy. It's just like he appears like in the back with a few scenes and then all of a sudden it's like,
all of a sudden he just walks out. Yeah, exactly. No, I can see your point, definitely, because I definitely am interested to read the book, for sure.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
And it feels like, you mentioned, like, the book's a really slow burn. I think maybe, like, the director was trying to get that same feel.
Oh, yeah.
But it was confined to, like, 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it would have been, like, a miniseries, a modern-day miniseries or something, maybe they could have, you know.
If they would have done what they did with Sherlock.
Oh, yeah.
With yeah. that, it would have been really up there on one of the great British miniseries to come out.
Yeah.
Especially with that cast.
Yeah.
Like, that's one thing about that movie is that cast is amazing.
Yeah.
Especially Gary Oldman. Yeah. Like, just has that calculated just look about
him. Yeah.
And like what you said is just like, he doesn't waste like a breath.
Yeah. I also love at the end, like, after he pulls out the gun, then he pulls out, like, this roll of mints. And it's just the slow opening of, like, the mint and putting it in his mouth. And just, he's moving it around his mouth. You can hear it moving around his mouth. It's just, like, a way for him to, like, focus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he needs, it's, I don't know, I love the character. I've never seen a character in a movie that's, like, there's not a million things going on with him, but the subtle little things he does explains that character so well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also like how they all have flaws. Like, everything that happens, everything that goes wrong with anyone's plot or anything's, or anyone's agendas, it's all human-related. Like, when Tom Hardy's character, is his name Ricky...
Something.
Something.
Ricky something.
He falls for a girl. You know what I mean? And that, I mean, it leads to help the plot develop, you know? But then when you see what happens, you feel like shit. But it's always...
Oh, yeah, now I remember.
You know, and it's always like Mark Strong's character. What happens to him is all a result of just being, you know, really good friends with somebody.
Yeah.
And then not following, like, the protocol you're supposed to follow, you know, and it's that. And Percy's feeling of being inadequate or not good enough, you know, always, it's, like, they can never leave their human, like, social side at the door when they walk into that room and they're supposed to all be, you know, business.
Professionals.
You're all professionals. It's never like that.
Well, I
even Smiley.
I really like that concept of just, like, you know for sure that there is a mole within the group. And the, you know, the fleshing out of all these people within this room, within this group. And it's like, well, it could be Percy. Because he's tired of being undermined, you know, or said that he's not good enough.
Exactly.
Or, you know, it could be Tom Hardy's character because it's just like that girl leaves him or something and he's like...
Yeah, he's kind of like, he wants like out.
Yeah.
Because he says like, I want a family and kids, I don't want to end up like you guys. You know what I mean? And he was kind of one of those spies that they send out on missions kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then falls for a girl and then is like, well, did he compromise
security
or information to get out of the whole thing or make a deal? So you never know.
Yeah.
Literally right up until the end exactly who it is. Because nothing, there's no, you can't really figure it out.
No.
Which is refreshing because most times you see movies and you're like, you can either
call
out exactly, because they're talking about this person, it's they're the MacGuffin, this is the real person.
Or there's a pan to the character and he's got a devious look on his face.
Oh, yeah. Or they do a musical cue of like, is it that person? I guess so.
Or they cop out with some bullshit. It was his evil twin.
Yeah.
And
clones.
And so, I mean, I haven't seen it yet, obviously, but what I do know about it, Gary Oldman, for one of his, I think maybe his only movies ever been a lead, and he got nominated for Best Actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, that's crazy to me. That the guy never had an Oscar, for sure, because there's a lot of people who don't deserve him to get him. And B.
DiCaprio.
B, I mean, he's such a great actor. He's been doing amazing work this entire time. And then...
Because most times he'll, like, at the most, share a lead.
Yeah.
Because I would say, like, Bram Stoker's Dracula kind of shared a lead.
Yep, that's true.
Toronto, you know what I mean? But or, like, even Professional. I mean, even though he's the villain, it was kind of... You know, but, yeah, he's never had the lead. You know, and he definitely should have won something by now.
Yeah.
He should be getting more... What I'm more upset about is he's not getting enough of those lead roles anymore.
Which is kind of weird because Liam Neeson can get all these lead roles and...
Yeah.
You know, he still has that name power Yeah. Definitely with, like, our age group, everyone's like, oh, Gary Oldman. Because, you know, he did Detective Gordon or whatever.
Yeah, he was Gordon.
So Batman. So now he's, like, a hot commodity. But, yeah, we don't see him in a lot of lead roles.
And maybe it's, like, double-edged sword of being such a great chameleon that people don't, like, you know, maybe people don't care about movies as much, don't get that connection. Like, this guy's all of these fantastic characters. And he's just pulling quality work all the time, but because he's so good at blending in and being this iconic role, that you forget it's this person. And I don't know.
Well, that to me is always a sign of a really great actor is I have no idea how Gary Oldman is when he's himself.
Yeah.
I have no idea. You know what I mean? You get an idea of like Tom Cruise and those guys.
Oh, yeah.
But you look at someone like Gary Oldman, every single character, like you said, he's a chameleon. He's going to literally be that other person and that other character in every film. You're not going to watch and go, oh, that's just Gary Oldman again.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can watch a Bruce Willis movie and be like, oh, it's Bruce Willis being Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
In a Bruce Willis movie.
It's Leonardo DiCaprio being Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Matt Damon being Matt Damon.
Honestly, I heard Gary Oldman is just like his character in True Romance.
Is he?
Yep. Dreadlocks at home.
Dreadlocks.
Super racist.
I heard he's like his character in Hannibal.
Oh, that too.
Mm-hmm. I heard he's horribly disfigured and it's just all CGI.
I heard it's like that character in Fifth Element. I can't remember the name of.
Yeah, I heard he travels through space.
Yes. Yeah.
Which he was so much fun in that movie.
Fifth yes. Element. Oh, yes. He had like a southern accent, dude.
He did. Yeah, he was like a space southern accent guy.
Yeah.
Space southern belle.
Yeah.
From Kentucky.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But that was my movie, if we want to move on. I mean, I definitely recommend it. And Jamie's got to watch it. I'll watch it again with you.
I want to see it.
Because so I went maybe a year without seeing it. So the other night I said, I should probably watch this again if we're going to talk about it. And I was
you remember so much about it. It's like you just watched it yesterday.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's been like 4 years since I've watched it. So I'm a little rusty on it. And also, I would like to try it.
Because it's based in the 60s, probably late 60s, almost 70s. I love the style. I've always said that. I love looking at film that's filmed in the 70s or 60s and 70s. I don't know why, what it is about the style and the look. And
mm-hmm. It's kind of like those muted colors.
Muted colors, grit, and just, you know.
Yeah, it feels real. It's a world that's lived in a way that they can't replicate. Yeah.
Like when you watch like New York movies in the, I'd say 60s, 70s, early 80s that were like based in New York City, I always think look amazing because everything looks lived in.
Yeah.
There's trash on the ground, there's fires and barrels and there's all that, you know, and now that New York's like cleaned up and everything, it just
boring.
It's boring.
Yeah. So that's why they shoot movies in Los Angeles now
for
those dirty movies.
Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit.
Fuck you, Detroit.
I think we ought to go to the communal movie.
Oh, so yeah, we're gonna do a movie every week that we all watch and we take turns doing that and choosing. And unfortunately, I guess out of proxy, I'm choosing the movie we all ended up seeing anyway, and that was Captain America: Civil War.
This was the only reason why I watched this movie. I'm just gonna say that.
Okay, well, that's good. I appreciate you and your dedication.
And mine was a combination of I have to watch it and I'm bored.
Okay,
well,
that's a good combination.
Did it solve the boredom? I effectively call this movie Captain America: Quip Wars.
I don't get started on it.
Okay.
Jamie, start us off. Like,
start off. Let Jamie say his piece.
Because Jamie likes this movie.
Well, we'll get into that. So, this movie, we'll get into what I thought about it, but this is the 13th movie in the Marvel Universe that they've been building since 2008. And at the time, in the first couple movies, they really had no... They wanted to do the Avengers, but at that point, they were just like, let's make this movie first and worry about that later. So, like, this slow build towards what's eventually coming with Infinity War, right?
Yeah.
But this movie made me feel like I'm sitting down at the dinner table, and my parents are fighting over bills, and, like, minutes or hours before they divorce. I felt really sad.
I had a different analogy.
Okay. Let's hear it.
My analogy was schoolyard squabble.
Okay. That's a good one.
I call it civil spat.
Because they're just like, at the beginning, they have like their little like reasonings. And they're like very kind of like shallow reasonings. They don't like really go into the grander picture. They're just like surface level. And then after that, it's just like, you're being, you know, unreasonable. You should join my side. No, you're being unreasonable. You should join my side. And that's all they fucking do. That's all they say. Mm-hmm. And it's just like...
Well, it's like immediately like, Cap gets a message like, I could go to a funeral. Yeah. Like, takes off and it's like, aren't you going to discuss this? And then...
Yeah.
And then, like, at that point, it's already... The sides are done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the Black Widow goes and talks to him and is like, well, we all signed. And he's like, I'm not. And I'm like, well, they didn't even have a discussion?
No.
About it?
So with this movie, there's like, so I think there are a lot of parallels, we probably get into that, between this and Batman versus Superman.
Uh-huh.
But I think overall, the ideals behind both of them are really like really well thought out like ideas, but they never go to where they should go with that idea. Like with Batman versus Superman, it's like, this guy is a god.
Yeah.
And we need to find a way to stop him in case there's like a 1% chance he's going to be evil, right? And then with Superman, he's like, well, this guy is a vigilante. He
does whatever
he wants. And then, he has to be in check too. So there's a cool idea there, but it's never utilized properly. Same here. They had this cool idea too where it's like, and they both deal with the aftermath of like the previous movies. Yeah. It's really funny. With this movie, they have like this really cool idea where it's like, okay, here's my side. You know, I've seen the devastation. Like I think they added Pepper to kind of make his side more attractive because his side, I didn't like Tony Stark. I didn't really care for.
I just don't think they could get Gwyneth Paltrow. I think it would probably have been too expensive. So then they did the whole spoil.
She's busy having her third child, Orange.
Is that the kid's name?
No, Apple was her first. I'm doing a terrible job. Her daughter's Apple. Then it makes it big.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if they
no
someone from Hollywood named their kid Orange.
I hope the next one's like Kumquat or something like that.
Oh, that'd be hilarious.
Come here, Kumquat.
Come here.
Whoa.
Quad? Whoa. I forgot the last part. I'm sorry.
I was going to say Quad. Yeah.
So, again, yeah, Captain, it's ingrained in their characters. Like, this is why I think Marvel's better overall because of their build up towards this. Like, you it's like almost like a soap opera at this point. You get to see. And yeah, good and analogy,
well,
right?
Well, that's the problem I have. Yeah.
I'm talking about. I said it was shot like a soap opera.
Oh, really? Nice.
Soap opera. It's drama without real drama. That's what I thought while watching it. It was like the simplest, lowest common denominator kind of drama. And seeing these characters that are supposed to be big on the screen and flying around and punching aliens in the face and stuff, all of a sudden trying to have like these serious discussions, and it's just not written well enough.
No,
that you don't. I didn't care about any of the drama in it because it didn't sway me one way or the other.
That's one of the problems. It's like the first hour and 45 minutes is that drama. Yeah. So I was bored.
Wait, were you looking toward comparative to the suit, like the villain part of it, which was thrown in at the end?
What do you mean? What?
Well, sorry, being bored. Hour 45, I figured.
Okay.
It's after the battle in the airport.
I don't like superhero movies really at all.
He's like, say it again.
No, just because
say it again. Yeah, because it paid. And now I'm going to say it again because we went off. I really don't like superhero movies at all. Like, there's not very many of them that I like. The first Iron Man I like. Guardians of the Galaxy was a great first watch. Revisited, you know, like a year later. It didn't really hold much to me. So I was like, going into this movie, I was like, I'm going to view this movie the way that it's intended for the audience. So I put myself in my 11-year-old self, and I got fucking bored.
Oh, okay.
Because there was just, I didn't see anything in the movie.
To touch on that.
It's just like, things just happened.
Touch on 11-year-old boy?
No.
I wouldn't.
No. To touch on what you said, to touch your 11-year-old self. I was in the theater with a bunch of kids, with parents, and the kids started running around and yelling and screaming because they were not paying attention. They were bored. Thought about that, too. I was sitting there watching, like, no kids are going to enjoy any of this until it's the big fight scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
Or when Spider-Man shows up.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they were bored. They were running around saying, can I go home? Can we leave? You know, and I'm just like, wow, that's not a good sign.
No, not at all. Really, the only time I was actually starting to be entertained with the movie is when Tony goes to see Spider-Man.
Hmm.
And then it goes into the airport, you know, fight scene, which, you know, we'll touch on that. I have my problems with that. And then after that scene was over, I went back to being bored. I was just like, I really don't care.
The movie's a bell curve, upwards bell curve of action. There's like a scene in the beginning. If you're looking at action, right? And the best scene's in the middle. Mm-hmm, yeah. And then it's like,
yeah,
it plummets.
Well, I'm saying it started at the bottom, didn't rise until all of a sudden, boom!
It's like a quick boner.
It was like quick. And then realizing that what you're looking at is actually just a mop from behind, boner went straight down again.
It is a phallic.
Well, here's the thing. Because of that curve, they could have avoided that curve as far as the drama side goes. Because like I said, 99% of the movie, I felt this drama just wasn't real. Didn't feel real, nothing about it.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know, are we going to spoilers with this?
Yeah, we're going to spoilers.
Yep, spoilers.
We're going to spoil.
Yep.
We've all seen it.
So. Robert Downey Jr., his character, Tony Stark, when he finds out it was Winter Soldier that killed his parents, even though that felt like it was thrown in at the end, to add more, that should have been way in the beginning.
It would have made more sense.
Then it would have made more, the drama would have felt more real, because you would have you could tell he was clouded in his judgment.
Yeah.
On this, and that's the only reason he would side with someone like Thunderbolt Ross, who even though he's got this little, we're going to do this protocol, and we're going to do this, Thunderbolt Ross wants to imprison or kill all superheroes because of his experiences with Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
That's what his agenda is. They didn't really touch upon it that much, but obviously the raft with the prison shows that he has no good intentions with any of these characters.
Right.
So yeah, I felt them waiting to the end with that really bothered me, because I was like, okay, now I can see Tony Stark's sort of his motivation.
Oh, yeah.
But it's too late. Way too late.
Well, that's the thing, too. They made it, it's like this big reveal. And if you remember in Winter Soldier, they revealed that Winter Soldier killed Howard Stark in, like, Armin Zola's little reveal. That was a reveal then.
I don't remember that either.
No, but I forgot about it, too. And, like, the emotional, like,
which makes me hate Captain America even more. He's an asshole.
He didn't tell him.
He didn't tell him?
No, he didn't. That's what I'm saying.
Tony asked him.
He knew him for 2 years. Him and Black Widow knew for 2 years. Didn't say a thing.
And yeah, he didn't tell him. Now, this is the thing. If it was any other person or character running around doing what Winter Soldier was doing, Captain America would have no qualms in stopping this guy. He doesn't care if he's brainwashed, would put him in prison. But because it's his friend from childhood, this guy can just go do whatever the fuck he wants, and that pisses me off.
Have you not, like, learned anything from the previous superhero movie, Marvel superhero movies? Friendship, man. Friendship is magic.
We're friends, so
we're friends. We must join together to fight the big guy.
What did you guys think about Zemo? Obviously underwritten, underutilized, usually.
Well, it's not Zemo from comics.
No, it's not. Not at all. Do you like at all his motivation? Not that he could pull it off, because let's talk about that later, but
there were too many that had that motivation. Like that woman who gets mad at Stark.
Alfred Woodard?
I want to.
Because when they did that with her, I thought there's no way Zemo's going to be the same thing.
Yeah.
That his family was killed in Age of Ultron. I said they're not going to do the same thing, because they established kind of that with that woman.
Yeah.
And they did it anyway, and I was like, well, why is he even named Zemo? It could have been any dude.
Yeah.
Billy Bob Cratchit.
And how did you know this guy how to do... How to find Hydra agents.
Exactly.
And how was he that smart that he could do all this shit? It didn't make any sense.
How do you know all that shit about Bucky?
Another thing, that Hydra agent would have never drowned in that.
I know.
Because his mouth was above.
Yeah.
All he had to do was lift his head up.
Have you ever done a fucking crunch before? Damn, you're a soldier.
Maybe he didn't. Maybe he's like, I'm dying. And then I'm like, okay, I'm done.
I'm done.
What I don't get.
I want to go into that woman right quick, though.
Okay.
Alfred Woodard? The most underused. She's a big actress, and she's just using one, okay scene.
Well, I thought she was going to have a bigger role.
And you know what? That was a shitty-ass scene.
Yeah?
The dialogue was absolutely fucking atrocious.
Occupational habit or something like that?
No.
Oh.
Hers.
Oh, hers.
How she's going in being like, my son died, yada, yada, yada. And she was just blailing it out, and she's like, who's going to avenge my son? She even starts out saying, you killed my son, or whatever. And so it gets to the end of, her little emotional monologue to Tony Stark. And she says, something about, you killed my son is dead, and it's all your fault.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you said that like five fucking times before.
Yeah.
Can I ask?
Like, that's horrible screenwriting.
It's horrible. Not only that, the scene was set up horribly. Mm. What was she doing? Just standing there facing an elevator on the off chance Tony Stark was going to come walk down?
A lot of coincidences in this movie.
I think someone else would have walked by. What are you doing? I'm standing here staring at elevator waiting for
Tony Stark. Waiting for Tony Stark. Come rip him a new asshole. You know what? Fuck her. Fuck her and her problems.
Damn.
She's not the only one with problems. What do they want to do? Do these people not realize that if the Avengers didn't do what they did, then the entire world would be
gone?
Well, that's what pissed me off the most. And that's why... So I was always Team Cap based... And this sounds stupid. I'm like a Team Cap, like Team Edward. I was Team Cap because of his perspective, right? And especially the scene where they do talk about the Sokovia Accords, like what to do. He's like, what happens if they tell us to do something we don't want to do? What happens if we want to do something that needs to be done and they don't let us? Like, there was a cool, like, idea behind his side of things, right?
Yeah.
Like, what do you expect? I mean, if fucking alien invasion's going to come, people are going to die. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I went to Team Cap.
Well, it's funny because nobody blames a villain.
No.
None of them blame a villain.
It was like that video that Ross was playing. Yeah. I was like... Yeah, well, fuck you guys for trying to save the world. Yeah, so I'm like,
you should have let me do it. Thunderbolt Ross.
And just like, Tony Stark, like one of the smartest, it's supposedly, you know, like the smartest inventor. Mm-hmm. And he's acting like that.
Yeah.
In this fucking movie.
Man, he had like no humor, there was nothing fun about really about
Tony. Under ruse!
Until actually the scene where he went to see Spider-Man.
Yes,
yeah, was funny. Exactly. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's the Tony Stark that we know. And then he was gone again.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, that's what I was saying earlier. Even with those little bits, it's still like, Marvel's known for being funnier than this. Yeah. It's more like serious than funny. And that's why those kids were bored.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Batman versus Superman did seriousness better than Civil War.
Oh, wow. Okay, and that's all they did.
Say that.
All they did.
That's where they put all their chips.
Well, you know, that's something that DC can do that Marvel can't do.
I mean, DC animated, maybe. DC animated are way better.
DC animated? Well,
yeah. The best comic
adaptations. The best comic adaptations outside of the books.
Yep.
Are DC animated.
Fucking even better. Flashpoint? Jesus Christ. That's amazing.
Well, even like one of my favorite books, Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, the two-part animated version is the same. It's like watching it's like reading the book. It's awesome.
Because they know how to dumb that shit down for the majority of people.
And that's why I recommend to people when they say, oh, I like Batman vs. Superman. No, watch this or read this.
Yeah.
That's an awesome basis for these two to fight.
Did you ever hear of the comic book Irredeemable?
I've read it.
They're making a movie about it.
Yeah.
I haven't heard about this.
So this is a guy, I can't remember the character's name. It's like a Superman-like character that... one day snaps and kills millions of people.
You told me about it all.
Floods continents. Yeah. And like his team, the Paradigm, have to find a way to stop him and find out why he's snapping. And like that's a cool idea for a movie. Whoa. That's been done kind of in Injustice. The Injustice run in the fighting game. They had a good storyline with that.
The thing is though is when it gets into the third act, it goes to shit. Oh, well. That's all I can say about Irredeemable.
Okay. But there's some cool ideas in comics that if they're adapted more directly.
Yeah.
And the thing is, faithful. They're not able to. That's the problem.
No, they can't.
Like, I feel like we have, like, the full spectrum here when it comes to superhero movies, because I know you, August, don't like them at all.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie likes the superhero movies, or is a fan of them for the most part. I'm on the fence on liking them or not, because I've read so much of the graphic novels and so much of the books growing up and stuff that it pains me at times when I see it on the big screen, and I know that it had so much potential if it could have did what was in the books.
Oh, yeah.
But it's near impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would love to see World War Hulk on the big screen. It'll never happen because they're never going to be able to get all these characters and all these superheroes. Yeah. It would cost $8 billion to make the film. So I know it'll never compare to the books or the graphic novels. But there are choices they can make to make it seem a little better. And I want to go back to your comment about the quips. And those little things are getting so annoying.
It's really fucking annoying.
Because it's like, okay, throw a few. Pepper them in every now and then, but not every scene with Winter Soldier and Falcon.
I was going to say, Falcon must have pissed you off then.
Falcon pissed me off so bad. Like when they took his wings away.
And that was a dumb one.
Okay, and this is the quip. I better not look out the window and see someone flying around in that thing.
Oh,
And then people laughed in the theater. Like, what the fuck are you laughing
at? No one laughed in my theater.
Oh,
yeah, no one laughed in mine either.
Yep.
The only one that did get me a little bit, I cracked a smile, is when Winter Soldier said, can you move the seat up?
Yeah, that one
got me, because it felt more, it wasn't like the standard.
Well, it's because you're taking these, you know, superheroes and like putting a common, you know, problem that we can relate
to. Yeah, that made me laugh. If that was like if that was like a 3-second clip on like YouTube or something, that would be
the
best part of Marvel. Yeah. Civil War. It's funny, because I must have some deep-seated memory or issues, but I liked, for the most part, obviously a lot of things, and they balanced pretty well, but a lot of things were like underused or utilized or written. But I kind of enjoyed the Falcon, Winter Soldier, some of it, because of like, they're both Cap's bottom bitch. And like, now they're like, who's going to be the better one?
Who's the better bitch?
It's almost like a little competition of brothers and stuff. It's kind of funny. But
but as far as the humor, where they nailed it, although there were a couple scenes of Spider-Man, I was like, meh. Spider-Man?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there were a couple scenes with Ant-Man that I was like, meh. But overall, those two were awesome.
Yeah.
One part I didn't like is, well, I did like when he grew into Giant Man.
Yeah.
Awesome. I didn't like that one scene where he's like, oh, and his eyes were all CG. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck is this scene?
Yeah.
But I did like when Spider-Man was literally like, holy shit.
Yeah. You know? Like, does anyone else have these little hidden abilities we should know about on my team?
Oh, was like, oh.
I think there should
be a Falcon who's like, everyone's got a fucking gimmick now. Or, everyone's got a gimmick. Yeah. He didn't say fucking.
But after seeing that, I thought a Spider-Man Ant-Man movie would be
awesome.
Awesome. The two of them together.
That'd be fun.
Team them up. Or have one show up in the other one's movie or something. That'd be great.
So you did say that Spider-Man, one of your favorite parts was like when Tony's like hitting on Marissa Tomei as Aunt May.
I didn't find that
scene like with him and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He's going to be in the Spider-Man movie next year. I'm not sure how big his role is.
I do have to ask one thing. I'm sure Tony Stark has resources and he can figure things out, but how did he know it was Peter Parker with Spider-Man?
It was so quickly added to the movie that they didn't have any...
Because he just shows pictures of Spider-Man, and somehow he knows it's Peter Parker.
Right?
Exactly.
So did he, like, go to, like, J. Jonah Jameson's office and rough him up and say, who's bringing you these pictures or some shit?
Yeah, maybe.
But, and also, I'm split on Marissa Tomei, because the Aunt May that I know is really old as fuck. And the second part is I want to bang Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, so she can't be that.
So now you want to bang,
Now I want to bang Aunt May, and it's disturbing to me.
Right? Because you're thinking like Rosemary Harris from the first Spider-Man trilogy, or like even the cartoons, like, Peter.
Well, it does make sense to kind of like modernize it a little bit and say, your aunt's probably not going to be 150 years old.
I think it
feels right because Tom Holland's so realistically young.
Yeah, he's 15. Yes. He's 16. Well, that's another thing.
16.
What is Tony Stark thinking? Letting people, grown men, beat on a 15-year-old boy?
I know, right? Bring him to Germany, no less, to do so.
Hey, you want
to
come to Germany and fight superheroes? And
like, someone that you've...
Someone you could die at any second.
Exactly. Like, what was his previous interaction with, you know, fighting someone? Just petty criminals around New York City. All of a sudden be like, oh, you want to go against a guy who can grow really huge?
Yeah.
A man with a shield that, you know, disobeys the law of physics.
That thing defies the laws of physics. Like, it was like really funny.
That Spider-Man went toe-to-toe with Cap and Winter Soldier and knocked him around quite a bit.
Spider-Man's the strongest one, besides Hulk and Thor. He's the strongest one in this whole universe.
When he grabbed, like, the whole fucking airport, the hangar was falling, he just grabs it. Yeah. It's like... Cap was kind of like, a little bit like, fuck, this guy's
he's got a hard kid.
Yeah.
Where are you from? Queens?
I would like to go into the action sequences.
Okay.
And like, each one.
Okay.
I want to start with the first action sequence.
Remind me what that is again.
Exactly.
Don't use my memory as a barometer.
You've seen this movie twice.
I have a terrible fucking memory.
You've seen this movie twice.
Give me a second.
No. That's what it is. This is all of it. It's when they're in that... Wakanda or whatever. Wakanda.
Oh, yes, of course. Jesus Christ. With Crossbones. Frank Grillo. Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's Lagos, Romania.
Nigeria. It was somewhere.
Are you on me with the whole shaky cam action thing? I can't fucking...
That is something. But my problem with this action scene was that there's no setup for it. So I really didn't care. They're like, oh, we're all, you know, going after this vial. And it's just like, oh, okay.
What was the vial?
We don't know.
It's like it was nothing.
Okay.
I thought that was something nothing. Zemo was going to eventually get a hold of.
I'll contest you on something here. These types of movies, when they it's like a superhero show or some other show with a team, you always start with them in action to show like an adventure before the movie essentially starts.
But it's supposed to show that we're a team and we do this all the time.
Right.
Kind of thing.
But they were after Grillo, not what the virus was doing. That was something they learned he was doing. But...
Something
else to bitch about.
We've got... there are a lot of movies that start like that.
Yep.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
The Bond movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the more recent ones I remember are the Daniel Craig ones. But they, like... I feel like they lead up to kind of something. Where all this led up to was Scarlet Witch, you know, throwing up crossbones when he decides to self-destruct. And it blows up that building, which didn't really sell, you know, how emotionally impactful it was in killing all these civilians, because I didn't see any fucking dead bodies. I just saw empty windows, and I was just like...
August, you're morbid.
And they kept... And when Ross...
You gotta sell it to me.
They totally tried to pull 9/11 imagery out of that, too.
Hmm.
Oh, really?
Like, when Ross was showing the videos, it was kind of like...
Oh,
boy, that vaguely looks like the building when it first got hit by the plane. You know what I mean? It was totally, like, trying to hit
it. It's just, like, going through and seeing all these previous movies. It's like, okay, now they give a shit about the damage that they cause. And it was also, like... Scarlet Witch, why are you kind of like crying? You were, you know, had someone who's self-destructing, would have killed a bunch of people around you. Okay, yeah, you threw them up. You could have thrown them up a little bit farther, but you were thinking about just getting rid of them. And you accidentally blew up a building with a bunch of people in it.
Mm-hmm. Can I say something about Scarlet Witch? Is anyone directing her on how she moves her hands? It looks so fucking stupid.
You don't...
Oh my gosh, she has like...
Now,
I am
jealous of her.
What? Of how she can move her arms and hands?
The power she has?
How fucking easy that would to act.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't think the director even said, let's try something unique and something that's... No, it's just...
Nope. Just imagine.
Like, I don't fucking...
Like airbending.
You wake up. You are getting paid like, I don't know, like thousands of dollars to go out there in front of a camera and just... move your hands about like you're airbending. And then she's like, ugh.
But they don't even like, they just always cut to it really quick and they could have did something cool and stylish with it. Like in the comics, like she kind of does like the heavy metal sign.
Yeah, she does.
You know, and all these things, and they don't do that at all. It's just gyrating your hands around.
Can we talk about how beautiful she is? Because I've always been a fan of her. Oh my God, I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. It's like that thing with the Olsen twins and then this is a way better looking Olsen.
Yeah, it's like the Olsen that should have
been famous.
Should have been famous, yeah.
Or
is now.
Yeah, she is now, for sure.
So, I mean, did you guys have any problems with the first, or am I just
myself? Oh, yo, I have a problem. Big problem here. So I was like, how's Crossbones going to play into this? And they fucking kill him off. How many villains did they kill off?
Yeah.
Or, like, never speak of again? Well, like, it pisses me off.
When he shows up, they do... the music cue of being like, bromp, like, this is the big bad of the movie.
Well, yeah.
And then he fucking dies, and it's just like...
He kills himself. Like, that's even shittier than normal. Like, you know, one of the things I've been looking forward to, and they haven't really addressed since the first phase, was Red Skull went to the Rainbow Bifrost thing, essentially. He went to another dimension. He didn't die.
They can bring him back whenever they want.
Hugo Weaving will never come back as Red Skull, but that character, there's some really cool... Yeah, it was a pretty good time. But there's some really cool things you could do with Red Skull. Like, there's a lot of allegory.
They could drop some hints or something, like he's kind of pulling strings from somewhere or doing something. Because the Thanos thing, I don't give a shit anymore.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's just big purple guys who can come down and, you know...
Fuck shit up.
They need to have some scenes with him interacting with Death or trying to get to Death and getting more of his side of things. Because, he just looks like a big, fat CGI character that you don't... No, what's he going to do? Shit. He's strong. I mean, like, I don't know.
So, now on to the next action sequence.
The big one. Or is that
No.
Yeah.
Man, he's seen it twice.
Don't get it, August.
And he is missing like again. All of these actions.
Again, do not miss.
I don't remember either. I just watched it yesterday.
This is one where like Cap is he meets up with Bucky, and they're like in that apartment in Bucky's apartment.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm.
And then it turns into the chase sequence. Mm-hmm. This is where I like to talk about the stupid how they film the action.
Yeah. You can't see it.
No,
you can't see any of it.
It's just all over the place unless it's CGI. And then we actually see hits like connecting and like falling through. But before that, it's all chopped up over the place. So like during that, I was just like, I didn't really care because it was just flailing around in quick cuts.
Well, I think towards the end of that, doesn't Black Panther show up?
Yeah, I love Black Panther.
I do, but they even CG'd Black Panther just tackling.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he just tackles Winter Soldier and rolls over, and they CG'd that. I'm like, you didn't have to do that. Some guy in a suit could have just ran over and tackled him.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I feel like he's even CGI'd when he's just standing there.
Yeah, no,
he might be.
He looks CGI'd. Yeah. I'm just like,
he's one of the more interesting Marvel characters, though. Superheroes, I think.
Yeah,
but I think still too. Enough with the CGI.
I did have the problem with Black Panther, though. I'm like, what happened? He's not powered in any way.
No, he just has
he's like
a suit.
Essentially he's like a Wakandan Batman that has a badass suit, right? It is made of vibranium, so it's probably has a good hit impact. But he's not. He was going toe to toe with Winter Soldier, and he's not that strong.
I think doesn't he have a jewel? Didn't he take that ring or something off?
Well, yeah, I noticed that ring. They didn't even bring it up, but it was holding vibranium. It was holding it.
There was some. They kind of like harnessed it. I think they used it like almost like magic.
Yeah,
honestly, which
makes sense with Doctor Strange.
The question of how is a certain character able to take this punch but not be able to take this punch?
Mm-hmm.
It's the way it's written is just like they switch it up.
Well, yeah, it's hard to keep that
like Rhodey. Consistent. Rhodey,
man, Rhodey, what the fuck?
And breaking then his back after probably like going into Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 3,
mm-hmm.
getting hit harder than fucking falling out of the sky in a little suit. There's probably cushion gel in there.
Okay, we should add some information though.
Okay,
I don't know. I don't think they mentioned. Did they mention that they had the ceremony where he became king after his father died?
They mentioned he's king. They didn't really do the ceremony.
Okay, in the comics, there's a ritual where they eat a Wakandan heart-shaped herb, which provides them with enhanced strength, endurance, and reflexes.
Oh, okay.
And it can only be digested by Wakandan royalty. That's from the comics. So
that's bizarre.
Even though they didn't touch upon it. That's an explanation for what he can do.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
So it's basically a super soldier.
Too bizarre for anyone else, apparently.
It's like a natural super soldier remedy.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if they're going to even mention it, though, is what I'm saying.
Doubt it?
Maybe in the next movie they'll mention, I don't know. Maybe not. Probably not. Because it's like that kind of thing. The comic books have to be more, like, realistic.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure that the Black Panther solo movie is going to come after.
No, it's before. It's, fall. Or February 2018.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it's right before Civil War, Infinity War.
No. I'm saying, like, timeline-wise. It's going to take place after Civil War.
They're real time, essentially. Like, 8 years passed since Iron Man came out. And that's what they said, 8 years passed. So, like, there's a lot of issues with that in terms of storytelling. Because there's a lot of time frame between them. But
did you notice the little Easter eggs? They dropped in Super Soldier's trigger words.
No.
The one that stuck out.
That was coincidental.
Was Homecoming? Was it coincidental?
That was coincidental.
Oh.
That was before they got the title and the rights.
Did they say it was coincidental?
Yeah, they did.
Why'd they have to say it? Why didn't they just say, hey, it was our Easter egg?
I thought it was an Easter egg.
There was one. one they wrote purposely.
Okay.
It's not in order, but there's 1, 9, and 17. And 1917 is the birth date of Captain America, or birth year.
Yeah.
Again, right. Cool. Imagine Homecoming was like, that was fucking clever.
That would have been clever.
But no.
So third action sequence, the pinnacle of the action sequence, you know, of the movie. Like, this is like the climax of the film.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Is where all of the superheroes are fighting each other. I was fucking pumped. And it was like, I was actually starting to get interested in this movie. I'm like, all right, this is going to be entertaining. And then it turned into punch, joke, punch, joke, punch, joke. And he kept stopping their fights to make one little quip.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got to a point where I think it was like Winter Soldier is talking to Spider-Man. He's like, well, usually you don't talk this much during a fight. And I was like, all right, it's become self-aware. Yeah. There's going to be no more quips after that.
No, it was Falcon. Yeah.
But no, it continued on. Yeah.
The only two that should have been joking was Ant-Man and Spider-Man.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Should have been the only
fucking two. Everyone. Everyone had a joke to make.
What I thought was weird about it, what they said, what Scarlet Witch said to Hawkeye was what I felt about the whole movie. You're pulling your punches.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
You're pulling your punches. Like, the whole movie is like, it's like, they're like, they like each other, they're friends, so they're not going to kill each other. So there's no real drama, there's no stakes.
Except for the god who tried to kill someone.
Fucking Vision.
Vision tried to kill Falcon.
Uh-huh.
He would have killed Falcon if he would have hit him.
Yeah, yeah, that beam didn't stop once it hit. It would have destroyed him.
Okay, yeah.
And Vision, can I say one thing? White out Vision's eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how off putting that costume and everything is with his regular eyes? I don't know why. Every time I see it, I'm like, just white out his eyes.
It's like Star Trek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's fucking cool. Old Star Trek. Yeah.
Do you guys like the seeds they're starting to plant with Scarlet Witch and Vision?
No.
August might not know what.
Yeah, they end up together.
Yeah, yeah.
And which my entire weird. Thought during that was like, does he have a penis?
Ah, yeah, good thought. I actually thought about that once.
Sure, he could make one.
Yeah? But then he's never really happy because he's like fucking weird android.
He could blue ball her so
And couldn't android so have just stopped everybody he wanted?
He could have taken everybody out.
Yeah, except Scarlet Witch, because for some reason Scarlet Witch can now control the mind gem.
I saw that.
How?
I don't know. Well, she could affect the other people's minds. I think it might be something to do with that. Yeah. The only thing that's sad about like where it's going, like there's rumors that or theories that the Eye of Agamotto, Doctor Strange's power source,
is it going to be a jewel?
Is a gem? A gem, stone. And then that him and or Vision will die before they can. You know what I mean? Like it's going to happen eventually. Mm. See, the thing is, one. Infinity War 1, everybody can die. They'll all come back.
Fucking hope so.
Yeah.
But they'll all come back. Because death can be resurrected by the Soul Gem.
I hope this is the death of superhero movies. I went in Team Captain, I left Team Ross.
Team Ross. Kill all of them.
When we're done this podcast, I'm making a meme.
I went in Captain.
That's going to be. Fuck Team Cap, fuck Team
Stark.
I'm Team Ross.
Because if you're leaving the fate of Earth and all of mankind to people who, like, get in schoolyard squabbles, we're fucked. Like, Jesus. These characters need to grow some fucking, like, balls and reach a level of maturity that probably someone in the 19-year-olds reach. Like, Jesus.
And I was mad that Ross wasn't more upset about where Banner was and stuff.
I thought that was going to happen. Yeah, there's some history behind that.
I didn't think he was even going to mention Banner, but he did.
But there's still giant history between those.
But you don't know the characters much. So Banner and Ross, like Ross, he dates Ross's daughter,
okay,
Betty Ross.
Well, let's see, because I want to bring that up. This is what bugs me, because if you saw the first couple Hulk movies,
yeah,
it's Ross or it's Banner and Betty Ross are the love interests. Or Betty Ross is a love interest for Banner.
I have. It's been a long time.
Okay. But in the comics, too, that's always been the two. It's like Spider-Man and Mary Jane.
Or, yeah.
So, when Avengers came out, and there's all of a sudden Banner and Hulk, and I'm like, they're not going to mention Betty Ross at all? And all of a sudden he's fallen for Black Widow? I'm like, Betty Ross, anyone? Yeah. So I thought, well, they must have written it right out. And then all of a sudden, Ross shows up in Civil War, and I'm like, whoa, this means that Betty Ross must exist somewhere.
She's like, where the fuck's my boyfriend?
Yeah, I know, where's my boyfriend? Banner would be like, where's Betty Ross? I forgot about her? I don't... Nah. Maybe she'll be in Ragnarok.
Can you guys explain me another relationship that, for me, appeared out of fucking nowhere? Captain America and Sharon Carter? Sharon Carter.
Was she in Civil War?
She was in Winter Soldier, yeah. There's some history behind them in the comics. They end up dating.
Okay, but I'm saying in the movies. I don't read the comics.
There was like some flirtation. Like, they should have probably kissed maybe in the first movie, but like there were some like before he knew she was the niece of Peggy. There were some deep seated like or like some sexual urges at least
in the Winter Soldier.
Yeah. She was like a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent watching, keeping an eye on his captain before everything fell apart.
He wanted to tap her ass.
I would too. She's fucking cute.
You know, her hair was pissing me off.
Her hair?
Her hair fucking pissed me off. It's straight until it gets right to her eyes and she's got two curls.
And I never fucking noticed that.
It was fucking annoying.
And she got that face. She looked like she was 11 when she got up there and started talking. And then Falcon was kind of like, hey, look at that.
No, because he never knew at that point who she was.
Yeah, but I didn't remember what I was watching. I was like, why are they fucking gawking at a 12-year-old?
At a eulogy.
Yeah, at a eulogy.
Oh, man, she's that bitch out. She's cutting her dead off.
Her aunt's eulogy. Her fucking aunt's eulogy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there being like, hey, you gonna fuck that?
Did you guys laugh at that when they cut back to them in the car after they kiss?
I thought that was funny. Even though I thought that kiss was fucking stupid and pointless.
I want to see, Falcon and Winter Soldier have more, weird little tiny things that.
They should just make a movie with Falcon. Yeah. Falcon and Winter Soldier in that Volkswagen Bug road trip.
Road trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be funny. And I want to see a Marissa Tomei.
Naked.
Now I want an Aunt May movie.
But it was going to happen. That's the thing. It was going to happen before Sony fucked up.
There was going to be an Aunt May movie.
What the fuck?
Let's put it this way. I have high hopes for Spider-Man now. I never, they said he was good. He was best part of the movie. But Tom Holland really has a good, take on the character.
Yeah. I wish he was a little, older. I love the college level. The college age Spider-Man is my favorite.
I'm afraid of the Spider-Man movie.
Really?
Yes. Because, the 10 minutes he was in there, he was all right. Yeah. He was fun.
You're afraid it'll be too much time to fill.
Fucking much of him being that kid.
Well, it's like okay,
I'm going to get fucking annoyed. I'm just going to be like, shut up, twerp.
But it's like when Hulk is in the Avengers or whatever have you, it's as short burst is enough to go. But when the Incredible Hulk, you ever see that one?
Yeah.
There was some good story, it just didn't resonate with the audience. You have the best of this character in a ensemble piece, and then you'll have the more of an arc.
Well, yeah, but Hulk doesn't annoy me.
Okay.
I like Hulk. I mean, even the Edward Norton one I liked a lot. I like Hulk's character.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Long history with
Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
It's just I don't know, it's like the kids on or needs fucking Ritalin. He's just like, I'm just gonna keep talking.
Scenes of Aunt May. Take your Ritalin before you go fight Scorpion.
Exactly.
Okay, here's a question. Who should be the villain? Now, we've seen Doc Ock, we've seen Green Goblin, Hobgoblin, Sandman, and I know they're talking about Vulture. I think it should be Scorpion. I want to see Scorpion.
Scorpion would be cool on screen. Yeah. I don't know. I hope it's not Vulture. I don't know.
Vulture's kind of boring to me.
We need more classic characters. I think Mysterio would be fun to see. Not the Fishbowl, because it's really cheesy, but...
No, it has to be Fishbowl.
Okay, good luck. It's not going to happen.
Then it's not Mysterio.
Mr. Puberty.
That'd be great. It's coming.
Prom Night.
They bastardized Rhino. They could
link this really well. If they finally bring in Kraven.
Oh my god.
Who's the hunter.
Ant-Man.
Him with Ant-Man or link him with having run-ins with Black Panther and Wakanda hunting, illegally hunting animals or something. And
that's a good idea.
And then somehow him in. But the thing is with Kraven, he's just a person.
Yeah.
He's kind of got, he's a little stronger than most people and stuff. But
so about that Civil War.
Oh yeah, that
Civil War, yeah. That movie that we're talking about.
Yeah.
You see, I don't feel... It's not enough. To even, hold our conversation. It's just,
We talked about 45 minutes on it.
But I know. We just get back into talking about the future with Marvel.
Well, and that's part of the... that's, the double-edged sword for that, right? Because they're always... I'll tell you this, too. They're always going, what's next? I like the Easter eggs this time. I don't know if you guys sat through that. Probably not. But they were both about the characters in this movie. They weren't about the future shit. It was just about the characters in this movie. There's a Black Panther and a Spider-Man and Winter Soldier kind of stuff. But it wasn't about, here's Thanos again. I'll have to do it again myself because that's all I can fucking say.
Well, I'm just saying the movie that I got, though, was if this was everything was like, even all the Captain Americas were leading up to this.
True. Yeah.
It sucked. It sucked. It straight out sucked. It's boring.
Are you saying this movie did?
Well, a lot of them sucked, yeah. But this one sucked.
We know how you feel about Marvel.
This one sucked really bad. Mm. Dialogue was shit. The story was just abysmal. Like, even the interesting aspect of it is that there's this government, you know, the whatever, Sarkova papers that come out, mm-hmm. and it causes these superheroes to split, but it just becomes in the back. It doesn't, like, really follow throughout the whole entire movie.
I know what you mean.
Because then it all just turns into being about Bucky. Mm. And stopping him. Like, it doesn't fucking matter that, you know, they're fighting over each other over ideals.
But to me, that was the real story of the film. It's Cap and Bucky.
Fuck, call it Civil War.
Because Marvel said, Feige said, put Civil War in it. That was studio involvement in
that.
That's
because there was a comic series called Civil War, and they knew people would...
Fighting
like those half comic book fans, half movie fans, will hear Civil War and go, "Oh, that's a comic, or that was a comic, so it's going to be something important," you know. And it wasn't, because it wasn't anything like the comic, anyway.
No,
but
no, and that's the thing you said before.
Everyone knows my position on Captain America. I don't like him; he's boring. He reminds me of Superman too much, mm-hmm. and I don't find Bucky interesting either.
No.
At all.
No.
And now it's been two full films based on Bucky. And it's like, I don't give a shit.
It might as well be like Bucky Barnes Civil War. Bucky Barnes Winter Soldier.
Maybe he'll take over the mantle and you guys will love him even more.
Fucking hell. Alright. I want to talk about the ending.
Okay.
Very fucking ending. It's during that little... that like little note... The phone that he sends Tony Stark. It's showing shots of all of these, you know, soldiers, you know, laying across, you know, the desk or whatever, all knocked out. And then it shows all the other, Falcon. He's in his prison cell on that raft that's located within the sea. It's submerged. out in this fucking sea. And Captain America, without a shield... In jeans, t-shirt, and like a denim jacket, like he walked off a Tim McGraw music video set.
Wait, before we go any further, I forgot there was a scene that made me laugh out loud. Whenever Captain America is trying to be incognito, he's always got these big shades, the ball cap, and the jacket. Like no one, like
and Falcon,
and they look exactly like people trying to look incognito.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
and then they're at a bar. A full bar with people all around, and they're talking out loud about what they're trying to be secret about.
They don't even have a drink.
And then what's her name? Blondie walks in and like hands them a file or something. And she's talking out loud. Like, everybody saw that. Cameras caught that. Everyone saw what this was happening. Mm-hmm. You did not convince me that this was just done incognito at all. So that made me laugh out loud. But
go
continue.
Ahead with the,
How'd he do it?
Namor.
Like,
obviously, Namor helped him.
It's dumb.
I don't know Namor. How
he's
did Steve Rogers in the first place find this place? If it's submerged underneath the water, did Tony Stark give him the information on where it's located? Oh, wait, no. Their last interaction, they beat the shit out of each other and parted ways. So how the fuck does he know this place?
The movie's too long. They had to cut the script.
At least do it in a logic way. And then I was like, one of the things I thought about was like... If Captain America, without his shield, can break into this secret base used to house all these super soldiers, I can name practically any villain, even small-time villains in all these previous Marvel movies, they could have gotten there and just fucking killed them all.
That's the thing, they don't
suppress
their
powers and they take away their equipment, so it's just like...
They don't think about any of that stuff.
No. Wait, yes. I knew I could trust my... Thunderstruck Ross or whatever his name is.
Thunderstruck Ross.
Thundercock Ross.
You guys,
that's his plan. What? That's his plan.
Undercock?
To kill them all of them.
Oh.
to kill them all.
Thunder, yeah, that is what he
exactly.
wants
exactly. Just get them all in that raft and just be like, you know, drowning. Thanos comes and just be like, hey, I got them all locked up all over, locked here.
Over here.
He kills them first and kills the entire world after. Oh, no big deal.
Team Ross.
I'm Team Ross until then I'm going to be Team Hulk. Because Hulk's just be like, fuck this. I'm not picking sides. I'm not anything.
So you guys, a couple days ago, before you'd seen the movie, asked me, is it at the end, do they all rally together and fight the bad guy? I told you, I'm not sure, because I appreciate that, at least.
A little.
They didn't really end on a positive note. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, I
they
were still see fractured how it's not at a end. Positive note for people who care.
Mm-hmm. They tried to be Empire, and it's not Empire.
Oh, it's not going to be Empire.
No. I would say, though, that they do team up.
That's a good point, though.
They do team up.
They do
for
team
a second.
Up. For a second.
Until the reveal comes
until
out.
Until the reveal that Cap is a giant asshole. Protecting his one buddy against the detriment of everyone in the world.
Yeah, that's true.
Stark is an asshole, too.
Yeah, he is. But I felt Bunch more for
how
Stark.
How could he not, like... They've explained it to him. Like, that's one of the huge things about Bucky's character.
Oh.
He's yeah. brainwashed.
Yeah.
By the Soviets.
I don't care.
Bro, I don't care.
Well, the thing is with Stark, too, he would never side with someone like Ross. Like, as soon as he would have saw that prison, he would have been like, no. Like, this is not... But they didn't... They just... He went along with it. And I'm like... It didn't make any sense.
I mean, he told the government to fuck off. Scarlet Witch told the government to fuck off. And yet, they're both on that team.
Black Widow told him to fuck off.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, yeah, Black Widow. Yeah, I meant... Black. Sorry, I'm thinking... Scarlett Johansson.
So, besides stories... This story... And plot... Characters... What else about the movie? Audio? Was audio great? Was the music soundtrack? Are you going to download that shit?
I didn't recognize anything. I don't remember anything from the score.
The only thing I recognized was like really strange audio cues out of nowhere. There's like one audio cue of children laughing.
That was in your mind.
Was it in my mind? Was that the one that heard that?
I didn't.
Maybe it was someone's cell phone. I don't know. But I was just like, why the fuck is this?
It was probably drowned out by the kids that were yelling to go home.
Mommy, this sucks. Mommy, fuck you.
I had a different audience. It was mostly like 30... 40-year-old people.
They watch these kinds of movies?
Is that a big fucking surprise?
I was kidding.
I mean, I could explain and go more into how these people looked, but I don't want to go into that.
Okay, all in all, I get it. You guys aren't big fans. It's okay.
I had an interesting experience in the men's room after.
Ooh, do tell.
We stopped in the bathroom to take a piss, and there must have been like these two ultra nerds talking about the movie, right? And it was I try not to be stereotypical, but it was the whole like, oh yeah, I read the comic and I watched the movie, and they did everything so good both ways. What a great movie. I saw it 3 times. I just wanted to like go piss on it. I just wanted to walk out and piss on it and be like, you fucking don't know. That's the like the depth level that people think about these movies. That's why Marvel can spin them out.
And yeah.
These are the people that they're going to go watch. Because
I can't do it anymore. I can't do it.
Don't kill yourself. There's more to live for.
These superhero movies are driving me to that point.
Damn.
Just because, like, I go and I try to shut my brain off and just be like, all right, enjoy this for just, like, a mindless action film. Don't try to think into it. But then it just... Then I just get bored.
They really need to do something.
Quick, cutty action and then just CGI action that's interrupted with little jokes. So it kills the flow. Because there was like another point during that airport scene that I thought they were going to be done with the jokes. And they're like, oh, Tony Stark brings in Vision or whatever. And they have like their little face off and they start running at each other. And I was like, okay, now it's getting serious. Now we're actually going to get
they're
serious
not stopping.
Fight. And they don't stop with the fucking quips.
I mean, they said it. It's almost like they're referencing what their people are going to say. They're not stopping.
Yeah.
Nope, we're not.
It just killed all the tension. I know.
I can't. But yeah, there's Civil War.
There's
in a long, elongated nutshell.
I mean, this is what's gonna happen. I'll watch one movie.
It helps.
Yeah,
it helps. But yeah. So tune in next week as we look towards the theater experience, mostly actually. All of our topics have to deal with something in regards to the theater experience. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
And, thanks for listening to Not Quite Hollywood.
I'm John.
I'm Jamie.
I'm August the Cynic.
I prefer the hipster.
The hipster cynic.
Damn.
I hate superhero movies.
All right, and see you Thursday.
Laters.